Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Bad Batch, Season 3, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morton, and I am joined, as always, by my fellow clones. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, nerds. Hello, fellow clones.
Kat Banish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hello, Trevor. I'm also here. Well, I can't say hello, nerds, because that's copying Tony said, so I'm just saying Trevor.
Direct to heaven to Trevor, yeah.
If you two write in and join. I'm also, because I live with a disease-ridden vector, I am sick.
Hey. Type a name.
Sorry, who is under the age of something, something, something.
You live with two disease-ridden vectors.
It's true. There's nothing better than a kid, like, we don't get into, like, just lots of hands that have been
lots of
stuck
places
in your mouth. You get sick fast. Yeah. Back to you, Dan.
Great. Okay. We are here to discuss episode 8, entitled Bad Territory. And we'll do a really quick recap. Tony, you got a quick recap?
I can do a recap. Hit you. All right. Well, this is basically kind of a furniture moving episode, which is what I was worried last week's was going to be. But they're moving the plot forward with not a lot else happening. You basically have two storylines. Hunter and Wrecker want to go get information about this whole M count thing. And specifically, they learn that the Empire is putting out other bounties on M count related targets. And they discuss going to talk to Fennec Shand, a character who previously appeared in the show and therefore is like in their Rolodex for bounty hunter.
Curious though, on that note, like the sheer premise that like bounty hunters are going to know the detail. I like how the Empire's like, yeah, so our secret project M count. Here, bounty hunters.
I mean,
let us tell you about it rather than being like, we're just looking for Joe. Anyone seen Joe?
Yeah.
They're contractors.
I've used weaker plot hooks in a D&D adventure, but yeah. And then your B plot is Crosshair and Omega are basically gonna do some self-care on space.
Shoot Prey Love.
Yeah. So Hunter and Wrecker go to a super seedy space bar to find Fennec Shand. They don't tell us where that is. I'm headcanoning that it is Narshada, the Vertical City.
Ooh, I like
Is that the same one which one was that? Is that the one from?
It's in some video games. I don't think it's canon anymore.
It reminded me of the planet that Obi-Wan goes to when he's searching for Leia.
Mm. I think that one might actually be named. I mean, it seems like there's a rich vein of garbage
planets
that are all neon and gambling, and this is one of them. That, you know, they show us that it's like, this is not like your other cantinas where droids aren't allowed. This is a cantina where droids enforce the, I don't know, drinking things. But they meet Fennec Shand, and Fennec Shand is just being super sketchy bounty hunter and basically agrees, if you go on a super dangerous mission with me, I'll get you some information. They go on their super dangerous mission. They go to space Louisiana.
Yeah. We were thinking about, like, when they got it, I was like, it's just like that boat that's in that James Bond movie.
It's also, it's very much, I mean, we're slightly doing Heart of Darkness, but like a very light Heart of Darkness.
Light Heart of Darkness.
Apocalypse Now.
They have to go upriver. In said river, there are both mines and alligators, which you think those would have taken care of each other a long time ago, but whatever. You know, Fennec Shand is just being just the bounty hunteriest of bounty hunters in that,
she
you know,
was great. She was
the
so
lives
good
of everyone around her disposable.
Can I make my favorite comment about her, which is that I love that for this entire episode, she refers to Hunter as Tracker, which is longer than his name and also synonymous with his name, but she's still not going to be bothered.
Love it.
Well, and she has the thing where it's like, I've read your files, but I don't remember Wrecker's name because I don't care to. I think she remembers Wrecker's name.
I also did say, as we watched, that I was shipping them. I was shipping Fennec and Wrecker.
So they there's your requisite I guess large monster, not giant monster, but there's a bunch of them, and they're just space alligators, right? Like there's
they're
not anything
just,
fancy
alligators
about them.
They're not even space alligators. They're like caiman. Caiman are terrifying. Yeah. If you guys don't want to sleep, look up freshwater alligators or crocodiles and just understand.
Oh, those could be in your house
right
now.
Terrifying.
Yeah. In your sink.
Terrifying.
Yeah. In your bathtub.
Yeah, just right up. Yeah.
Also, freshwater sharks, real thing. also terrifying.
Yeah, bull sharks. Yeah. Anyway, in addition to things you should be afraid of, they fight the alligators or crocodiles. But yeah, I'm just saying, like, you know, throw some extra eyes or fins on there. Space them up.
Or the goats with the extra horns. But otherwise, yeah. Just Scottish goats.
And then they basically get to the bounty's hideout. There's some fight. The bounty is a praying mantis
who lives
guy.
In a termite house with termite mounds. It's cool. I don't know. It's cool. It's very praying.
Yeah. He tries to get away. Fennec stops him, but then there's more fighting. He apparently needs to be stunned like a bunch of times. Yeah. Along the way, Fennec and Hunter and Wrecker have a little bit of chatter where, like, you know, it seems like they have told Fennec that, you know, Omega is not with them anymore, and she doesn't seem to super buy that. And she drops one little weird piece of information, which is that she doesn't care about Omega anymore because the contract was canceled.
Which we think is it's Nala Se, right?
I think it's Nala Se. I think we
did
know that.
Is it Nala Se? Does that line up? Yes. Okay, yeah. So that was not exciting. Okay, I wasn't sure if that was an exciting thing.
We may have known that already.
I think we did, because I think at the end of that episode... that Fennec appears, because it's her and Cad Bane going after Omega. Right. And I think Bane is maybe not
working. I remember being like hijinks. Yeah.
Is Cad Bane alive at this point?
I believe so. Yes, because he canonically needs to show up later in Book of Boba Fett or Mandalorian, one of those.
Yes,
he fights with Timothy Oliphant.
He gets killed by Timothy Oliphant.
Does he get killed by Timothy Oliphant? He kills Timothy Oliphant.
Wait, Timothy Oliphant dies?
Then he shows up in a back to tank at the end.
He gets shot.
Anyways, let's not relitigate Boba Fett.
No, quick. Let's go back and watch that.
Just the Timothy Oliphant scene.
That's what I want to watch the supercut of.
It's called Justified. Just go watch that.
Or it's a little bit more Deadwood, but, you know, either way. What if we watch Deadwood and Justified in chronological order?
Isn't he also in The Good Place as Timothy Oliphant? Yes. As the guy from Justified?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw Good Place before I saw anything with Timothy Oliphant. It was like, I did not get that scene at all.
Anyway.
Television that is not Star Wars.
Yep. They bring in the bounty, and then Fennec Shand is like totally sketchy, where she's like, oh yeah, that information that was like the whole point of this episode, I'm not giving that to you now. I will call you. Which, like... don't trust a bounty hunter to follow through on that. Right. And in addition to, you know, not only am I not in a rush to get you the thing that you were super promised, I am going to call somebody else and tell them that, hey, there's still some clones around. We don't see Fennec Shand has a...
who she's talking to. And we don't hear what they say. So there is a chance they're trying to do like a hot take. No, that's not actually a hot take.
That's not a hot take.
Fake out.
Just when you want to use a couple random words. It's possible that they're doing a biscuit toss.
This is what we call Fish and Timothy.
Biscuit toss. Yeah. Anyways, no, that they're doing a fake out that, in fact, she's just saying, hey, if you want to meet up with them, here's where to find them, and like give them information we talked about.
Oh, you
but
think
in
it's
a
just
real
like
menacing
people.
Way. In a real menacing way. If you want to find them and make them some cookies.
Here's their Amazon wish list. I guess that seems like who is on the other line of that phone call seems to be the one. Sorry, call. Is that question
Cad Bane or person with Ventress? Right.
That Asajj Ventress was my kind of, because we still have an Asajj Ventress on the mantle place that has not been taken down yet. So
don't the two of them fight?
I don't remember why Asajj Ventress would care about the clone, about the bad batch.
We don't know.
Or not.
We honestly have no idea.
So maybe that doesn't make any sense.
Because
it did seem like this was somebody who was like, had some kind of score to settle with the bad batch.
I did really want it to be like, you know, because they did the whole muffled voice thing, that it was going to be like somebody revealed to have like a really high pitched voice.
What if it is Boba Fett?
Oh, no.
Boba Fett is what, like, 17 at the time of this show, 16.
He's a teenager.
Right?
Yeah, I guess it's too early for it to be.
Yeah, and I don't think
he was
know
real
each other
surly
yet.
Though. Yeah,
he was real surly.
He very, remember he's a wasn't
very
he in
emo.
Jail for a bit. 17. They put him in jail.
Yep.
They should not put kids in jail. Star Wars. What are you doing?
Do you want to talk about America
or droids?
Well, yeah, I mean
we
he's in jail
put
with
kids in
with
jail.
With Well, but he's in jail with, like, with Bosk. Bosk is a Trandoshan. That doesn't seem, like, safe.
Whoa, that's, like, okay. What do you have against Trandoshans?
Boy. Can I...
I just think that they could eat a child if they were so inclined to.
That's offensive.
Not all Trandoshans, they eat, Tony.
They eat... Well, okay, but Bosk does. Yeah. Bosk has a history of murder. Okay.
Just this one Trandoshan.
Yeah, I know other Trandoshans are like, I mean, Sid's a Trandoshan, and Sid just runs a disreputable bar.
But Ryan kind of sold them out,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, you know.
Here's the Star Wars show I want, like the Trandoshan who has the heart of gold.
Dan, you remember that time that you ran the Star Wars role-playing game and you let one of the player characters be a Trandoshan and another player character be a Wookiee?
Yeah. That was we only played one session of that.
We did indeed.
Were you in your mid-20s? That seems like a big mid-20 thing.
No. Oh, okay. He was solidly in his 30s, which is to say emotionally.
Also relevant to which players were playing those characters.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And then plot B.
Anyway. Oh, yeah. We're Space Grease. I guess... Hunter basically says, like, you should do something about his hand. Yeah, have that look at. So they scan his hand, I guess, and they're like, it's not nothing physically wrong with your hand. Must be in your brain. Crosshair doesn't like that because apparently, just like, women dying of a broken heart,
exactly
they have not diagnosed
PTSD. Like, I think this is further evidence that the medical practice in Star Wars is really underdeveloped. And they're like, we don't know what mental health is, but we think it might exist.
I also believe that perhaps that droid is not have a scanner so much as a light that it shines on your hand.
Like a flashlight.
Yeah.
There is, I mean,
and goes,
there's a surprising amount of healthcare that is delivered by droids in Star Wars, and I don't know if we know anything about their qualifications to do so.
2-1B was a medical droid. It has medical in the name. What do you want?
I'm just
medical
I don't
doctor,
know if we
medical droid.
Right,
I'm just
sorry. Go ahead. I'm gonna make a bad joke.
I don't know if that droid is actually qualified.
Look, we have one tool, and it's Bacta. And if Bacta can't fix it, it probably can't be fixed.
But Bacta can fix a lot of. Actually, do you wonder because of Bacta that they've like it's basically prevented them from investing the resources because they basically rely on it too much? Of Bacta. Oh, so just throw them the Bacta tank, right?
Do you think there's like
investing in mental health?
And is there just
care.
Is there like a big pharma company that's behind Bacta?
Oh,
is it,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same way we don't talk about preventative medicine. We just more about the reactive medicine, right? Like if there were proper. Oh yeah, I like this. I really like
what
this
if there
idea.
Was like
Tony.
A what also if it like develops like a Bacta resistant strain of like.
Isn't there Bacta resistance
later
in Star Wars?
Yeah. This is getting shot, yes.
That, I mean, Dan,
I'm sorry,
that is
gone.
Most of the reason people end up in Bacta is involved in shootings. Just yeah.
And when you
clear.
Find out that the people who make Bacta also make firearms.
Also make,
oh, yeah.
Oh,
that, this is where that,
yeah,
the, when they go to
the money.
Planet with the greyhounds that race that are not greyhounds. The dinosaur racing
in
planet?
Episode 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, episode 8. Yeah, that's totally what's going on here. I think we got a real plot here.
Cracked it wide open.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure if you pause all of those scenes and zoom in, the Sackler family is in the back of one of those. And they are just having a grand old time. So.
And all their investments are funded by the taxpayers of the various planets. It's great.
Yeah, you know.
Anyway, so Crosshair's hand hurts and
anyway,
they meditate,
yeah, so,
and that's pretty much it.
No,
what's that droid's name? Like
AZI 3451185249872147.
Tony?
No, I think he's.
No, I'm reading it off of the screen. But so it is
nearly as good as Dan's of Remington Steel.
Yeah. AZ3 does not know what's up with Crosshair and basically suggests something's wrong, and then I guess later. I know the names of characters in this show. Omega teaches him meditation that she learned from a Jedi, who are the only people who know meditation in Star Wars. specifically, from the Wookiee Jedi that was one of the other people that escaped Order 66.
I was very happy about that callback because when they did that meditation, there was like a lot of lingering on them learning how to meditate. I was like, that's going to be important at some point. And it was much, much later. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it was cool. It was cool. I like it. It's cute.
That's the episode. I mean, I feel like didn't
Goodbye.
Hit as hard as the previous episode. I don't think it's a bad episode. I thought it was a fun episode. I like that it does seem to like recognize a variety of things that happened previously in in the Bad Batch world. I like that it returns to some characters like Fennec Shand. Like it doesn't feel like other episodes that feel like they were like, we just need to hold space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Where it's like, we need something to stall until the next episode.
Yeah. It was a couple things I really loved about this in no particular way. I totally agree with you. I enjoyed this episode. I think first visually, again, the little detail. I don't know if Omega, you guys will see Omega, but I say Omega. It's fine. We'll go with it. She now has a rope necklace that, again, the detail on that is extraordinary. And then when we're in Louisiana, which I'm sure might actually have a, like, the mists and the animation, like, yeah. Every time they just cut to a scene, I was just, oh, that's gorgeous. Oh, that's gorgeous. We have to look at it. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So just, like, from that standpoint, it was joyful to watch.
Good lighting.
Yeah, yeah. Great lighting. Just, like, yeah. In that, the crepuscular, I'm sure there's a, no, correct. Okay, thank you. Just correct. Mm-hmm. Sort of a shooting. And then from a character perspective, I think two things I really liked. One is to finally see Wrecker stopping explosives rather than causing explosives. That was good character growth.
Yeah.
And then I think the highlight for me was Crosshair being vulnerable and just constantly being vulnerable. And just the way he kept asking questions like, wait, you've been to Kashyyyk? And like, wait, who's this person? And like him... Without, as we've talked about on the show, like they don't have to go into all the details, but they do these lovely little hints of Crosshair is really suffering the fact that he has missed so much of the experience that his family has gone through over the past few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of time. Wants to catch up, right? You know?
Yeah. I feel he's now trying to make a connection, which he was not trying really before. I think one thing that stood out to me was, you know, we talked a lot, I think, in the last season about one of the challenges of having an overstuffed roster. And this episode really, what helps it shine is the fact that we end up with Hunter and Wrecker and Fennec Shand on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And three people is a really good number for a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
It provides an interesting dynamic. There's space for everybody. I was thinking about, like, as much as I love Tech and I miss his character, and we get a mention of him but from Fee this way, if you put him there as well,
too much.
That would have been overstuffed. There would have been too many people there. And I think they've realized between having, you know, Echo sort of be a recurring character.
Yeah.
And
there are all those episodes where it feels like they forget that Echo's there because it's like there's too many people on this ship for them to have a line of dialogue, basically.
Yeah. So I think that serves this entire show really well, that they can sort of, you know, create space and break it down into sort of a couple smaller groups that still get a lot of character work done.
It's like soccer. It's all about the triangles.
Yes, it's all about the triangles. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Ted Lasso reference. Just thrown in there.
Yeah, acknowledged.
I know you don't, but I'm just for the listeners who may not watch Ted Lasso. Like, what is Kat talking about?
Is that like Remington Steele?
I think so. I've never seen Remington Steele.
All right. And then the other thing, I'm trying to remember what the other thing I was going to mention was. I mean, I agree with you about the Crosshair thing. It is interesting to watch his character develop because he does have that sort of like, you know, resistance to this idea that anything's in his head, but he's willing to try.
Yeah.
The meditation. And I enjoyed that, again, that character development of him. We got a lot of him dealing with his loyalty issues, but we haven't seen a lot of him dealing with the rest of the squad in a non-antagonistic fashion for several, like basically since the first couple episodes.
Well, he was always standoffish, like even in the original early, he's always the, I mean, they're all kind of loners, but especially him. Interestingly too, it ends with them meditating. It doesn't end with sort of the happy thing, like, oh, now he can shoot really well, right? Maybe I kind of left that scene with maybe he never does, and that's gonna be okay.
Learn to come to terms with it, because as Omega points out, you're still better than most people, and he's like, ah, that's not good enough. I need to be the best, and I need to hit. It's hit or miss, and maybe there is a growth element in there of realizing, like, yeah, I don't have those skills, but I still have a lot of skills. I still have stuff to offer, because there's a fundamental identity question, right?
Exactly.
Like, is like he is in this identity crisis of, if I can't be the sniper, which is what he mentioned several times, like, you got, for being a sniper, you got to do this. If I can't be the sniper, who am I?
Well, going back then to our argument of who lives and who dies at the end, there is a world where essentially Crosshair becomes the new parental figure and Wrecker. This would be horribly sad, and I really, again, I hope that everyone ends up very happy on Pabu, but I could see a world where, like, Wrecker and Hunter show the ultimate faith restored in Crosshair by entrusting Omega with Crosshair. That is a very possible ending in my mind.
Yeah, that's true. All right, anything else about this episode? or
you know, I like that Fennec Shand comes back. Yeah. It is interesting that they, you know, yeah, and you know, it's interesting. Fennec Shand is one of those small numbers of characters that we see both post original trilogy and pre original trilogy, who's kind of become, you know, not at the level of say Ahsoka, but you know, has become an important character that we see throughout the Star Wars universe. Also, one of those characters we see both in animation and live action, which is, you know,
I kind of like how consistent she is, at least up through Mandalorian, where she is like just straight up bounty hunter, and it's like she went through that entire war. Right. And she didn't change. What we see of her when she first appears in The Mandalorian, you know, years after the Rebel, you know, Empire War ends, is exactly consistent with this character here.
And we, as opposed to, say, like Ahsoka, who's like been kind of all over the place on different callings and things like that, and spent a lot of time thinking about stuff. And Fennec Shand is like, nope, just hunting bounties. That's what I do.
Take my job.
It does start to make me want to do like math on how old is Fennec Shand in the Book of Boba Fett? Because she is, I'm trying to think. I guess who are our bounty? I guess Cad Bane would be the other bounty hunter that is kind of an operating bounty hunter for a very significant amount.
Can I
blow your mind?
She's gonna be in her 50s, right?
Oh no!
She's 60.
Well,
no,
she's 60 years old. 60. Yes. Yes,
my God!
Martial arts keeps you young.
She looks amazing.
I assume.
She's amazing.
Yeah. It's only you know, basically between this and the end of Jedi is what, about 30 years, or between The Mandalorian. So it's like 8, 11 plus. It's about 30 years.
She could be 30. It's certainly possible.
She could easily be in her 20s and or 30s here. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate them too. Yeah. I mean, obviously now they have the. I do. Was Fennec Shand someone that actually started in live action and then pulled to animation afterwards?
She debuted in The Mandalorian.
I like them. I get it. They build the characters' faces off them, the voice. Mm-hmm. It's great. I also realized, too, when they were walking onto the boat, that her gait is very different than the two clones. Like, her pace is slower, but she covers much distance, and like she reminds me of like a cat. It was very, very cool. Like, I never realized, like, oh, I guess, everyone's gait is different.
I was kind of surprised.
Animation.
That she spent so much time without her helmet on. That was somewhat interesting. And you know, I mean, Ming-Na Wang is an actor who has done a ton of voice work. So
she was the Mulan, right?
She's in one of the. She is the Mulan. Yeah, she's in a Batman animated cartoon. She's in a ton of stuff. She goes back. I wonder. I mean, as Bad Batch kind of heads toward the end, that is the big question in my head, is like, where do we go next with our Star Wars animated? Well,
that's a great question. I do have some mail, listener mail that leans into that.
All right.
I had a lot of listener mail this week, but we'll start off with some email messages, which of course you can again email us at acp@theacoupl.com. I'll start with the one that's about this.
Okay.
This is from Nick. Nick writes, "Hi, Kat, Dan, and Tony. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Enjoyed your discussion about the future of Star Wars animation. I feel fairly confident they'll continue producing cartoons in the Clone Wars style following that line of shows, and the premise will be announced just after the Bad Batch's series finale. I'm sure it's not a coincidence that the release of numerous episodes this season has been doubled up so that the series finale will be on May 1st, just days before May the 4th. Since there's no Star Wars Celebration this year, announcing a new series a few days after the prior one ends on May the 4th makes a ton of sense. As far as potential stories, I could see the latest two-parter, Infiltration Extraction, as a backdoor pilot for a new series that follows Rex, Gregor, Wolf, Echo, and other Regs as they continue to recruit and save clones, establishing a network a la the Underground Railroad to get clones to freedom and retirement, should that be what they want. A network that during the series could be built on to become the path, where you have clones working to help Force-sensitive escape the Empire. This seems to make a lot of the boxes one would want in a series. As a popular lead in Rex, continues the clone story we've had going, it ties into other media like Obi-Wan and Jedi Survivor, as a solid narrative with the clones helping establish and conduct the path, serving as their penance for Order 66. As for the Bad Batch, my bet is that Hunter and Wrecker survive to raise Omega on the Space Grease planet. Crosshair will be around too if he survives, which I don't think he will. I'm betting he sacrificed himself. I'd expect any survivors to make an occasional appearance in future shows. Omega will 100% be around for future shows and may be a lead if the series is set when she's more of a mid-teen young adult."
Mm-hmm. I agree with all that. I think that makes tons of sense. But I do think it really depends on how the Disney proxy battle goes.
Well, also, the other thing I can't quite rule out is that a lot of times there's, you know, we think they'll zig and they zag You know, like it's like, oh, this seems perfectly logical. This is exactly what I do. And they're like, do something totally different. Yep. You're like, oh, well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes sense, but it's not what I expected. Yep. So yeah.
I'm still surprised. Like, I was very surprised when they announced the Bad Batch in the first place.
Yeah,
so.
Again. I agree.
We'll see. We'll see. Tony, did Dan tell you about the for folks who don't know, it's fascinating, the proxy battle and the jingle you heard? Because I think that's worth sharing.
I will share the story because it is a weird story. For those who don't know, Disney is currently in the middle of a battle over their board. There is an activist investor named Nelson Peltz who has teamed up with Ike Perlmutter, the former head of Marvel, in trying to basically get a lot of people to give them some board seats so that they can influence the direction of the company because they are angry with the CEO, Bob Iger. More personally, I think, than in any rational business sense.
Like what most is proxy battle
weird about this is it has bled over into some mainstream media. I have heard multiple ads for You Should Go Vote for like the Disney board. The innocuous one I heard was on like NPR or something where it's like, oh, by the way, like, you know, it was an ad read about like Disney's board. The weird one I heard, and I heard two versions of this ad, was on a podcast I've started listening to called The Town, which covers Hollywood Insider. Mm-hmm. There was a Disney jingle one where it's like, doo, 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 and it's like the voice is like the Disney guy doing the Disney vault. It's like, remember, folks, vote for the board suggested by Disney. And I was like, this is weird. And then weirder, they had a host read ad from the host of that guy. I was like, that guy's, I don't know if he's technically a journalist, but he's like nominally like involved in the industry.
So Disney will take ad reads. Happy. I have no ethical issues or qualms around this.
Do you need to disclose anything?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Kat is heir to the Disney fortune. No,
For work, I have to do a whole bunch of disclosures. So it's I don't think this is a conflict of interest. I think. I'd confirm.
I meant because you have
a... we own like 4 shares of Disney stock.
I own 0 shares of Disney stock. So I'm pure. Bring me your money, Disney. But, you know, whatever.
It was because of the year they at Disney, the shareholder event that they did, they announced like all these videos. And if you were at the shareholder meeting or watching the shareholder meeting, you then got to see all the trailers. But all the folks who didn't have Disney stock couldn't watch the trailers. I was like, God, Dan, we have to go buy a piece of Disney stock so we can watch. And then they never again did that. So I'm ready, though. I'm ready.
That's called They Got You.
Yeah.
So, soccer's game. And you lost. Your stock has gone off.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I've got two here that actually hit on the same point, and I was fascinated because they came in pretty close together.
Is it just the same person with 2 different emails?
No. Okay. Mm. First,
Do that, people.
Raphael writes, hello again, podcasters, your Ninja Turtle fan again. Me and friends have taken to calling Filoni Star Wars Star Wars' resident plot hole filler.
Yeah.
In that vein, I was looking to see what you guys thought of some of the questions. I feel like the Bad Batch is best poised to answer, or at least set up for the oncoming movie somehow. I assume this is for the Mandalorian and Grogu. In no particular order, what is the timeline of Project Necromancer, i.e. when could they make Force-sensitive clones, and how does that line up with Palpatine and Snoke? Because they look pretty old in Episode 9. 2. Who is Snoke a clone of? 3. How come there ever was a Snoke? Where was he the whole time? Oh, this is starting to get a little more desperate, Raphael. I'm sorry.
I just see Dave Filoni in bed. He's wearing a cowboy hat, thrashing in his sleep as he's shouting these questions as the lightning crashes in the distance.
It's very Dickens.
Because every Star Wars media that introduces plot holes, Dave Filoni will not rest until he has pave them over.
Some sort of curse.
4. Yeah. What is the story of Rey's parents, and is it involved in Project Necromancer? Again, age-wise, the timeline is starting to crash together.
I thought the story of Rey's parents was answered.
The granddaughter.
Yes, but we'll get there. Hold on.
But it's like of a clone. You know, I mean, is Jango Fett Boba Fett's son? Or
this is relevant. Let me finish. I'll finish the email.
Get the right
5. Who is Omega a clone of? If it even matters.
How many questions are there?
She could be nobody and just a proof of concept. And finally, how does Hemlock's work turn into Hux's work in The Mandalorian?
Yeah.
the usual way, just academic theft and don't cite
them.
Although
I think that means Gideon. I think he means Gideon, not Huckster.
Yeah.
Just sheer academic plagiarism.
I mean, I did have a lot of Mandalorian thoughts in this episode, as it's like, oh yeah, the Empire is sending out bounties on M-Count people and probably has little tracker fobs on them. And,
yeah.
But that's a different show. Don't worry about that. And even, you know, when Ming-Na Wang referred to, I guess it was Nalase as the client, I was just like, oh, no, not that client.
Not
just
that client.
A client. A client, not the client.
Rafa, the client.
From Wolf, Werner Herzog.
It was Werner Herzog, character is only referred to as the client.
Yeah. Raphael wraps up, I don't want to fall into the MCU trap of expecting Mephisto and then everything to be tied into a bow at the end, but I also feel like the Bad Batch is in danger of answering no questions. Thank you for the hours of fun, chaos, and exasperated sighs, Raphael. P.S. Were you happy to receive an email without any 80s detective show references?
Yes. Thank you.
Doesn't that technically count as one reference
true.
To it?
Raphael then immediately followed up and said, oh my God, I just had a thought, of course, as soon as the email was sent. Omega is Rey's mom. That's my theory. She met Palpatine's son in some cloning scenario and they escaped together to be junk traders. There, that's my Mephisto.
I want better for Omega than that.
What
than
is confusing to, about
to,
that?
To have a child with Palpatine's son slash clone.
Yeah.
I want better for her.
That character we do see briefly is played by Jodie Comer.
Yeah.
And
which character?
Does she have a New Zealand
Ray's mom. In flashback, we see her played by Jodie Comer.
I have no recollection of that scene.
That movie is
I mean, if you blinked, you missed it, basically.
Yeah, it's very short. Yeah.
I don't think... Does she have dialogue in that scene?
Maybe, like, no!
Okay, but, like, she's not like, let me tell you about where I went to college. No!
This is my name before you kill me off!
Yeah.
Jodie Comer is British,
these are my
Kiwi.
Beliefs and ideals!
I think there is also an interesting question here in that we know that grown-up Omega looks like Emery.
Do we know that?
We are highly suspecting it if they're clones.
Yep.
But I hear Emery that. Look like?
But at the same time, right, that like Emery doesn't have any M count, so there's also a chance that Omega is just someone totally different. Mm-hmm. That she's just another
female.
She refers
to her as a sister. But
yeah, but you made that.
That's a logical leap.
It is a logical leap. It is possible. I believe it would not surprise me, but it is not.
I think one challenge there to talk about the difficulty of this in terms of casting is that Jodie Comer is obviously British. The woman who voices, both the women who voice Omega and Emery are indigenous.
Easy. We just remaster and reissue the movie and we just change the voice.
We just insert a different character.
I don't have the data to back this off, Dan, but I believe that Dee Bradley Baker and Tamora Morrison are different people also. So, you know.
It's easier to go in that direction.
We're waiting for the final science to weigh in, but I'm pretty sure it's two
different
people.
Let me just put it this
people.
Way. It's easier to have the direction where you have a character who is a person of color in live action voiced by a non-person of color in animation than to go in the other direction is a lot dicier. Yeah.
True.
So on this topic, Matthew writes in, hey, ACP, an alternate podcast name for the three of you could be Quips and Quagmires. Accurate. Always enjoyable to hear breakdown and lively conversation about Star Wars.
So the Q&Q?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two Qs.
Q squared.
Here's an idea for where Omega may end up in the future and in live action. Since Omega's DNA is likely used to resurrect the Emperor, it could be that Rey also shares some of her DNA. This kind of makes Omega the great-grandmother of Rey in a weird way. What if Omega shows up in the new Raid movie to bring a complicated familial relationship to work through, but also to provide some Force wisdom without relying on the Force ghost of Luke? This assumes that Omega comes out of hiding when she senses that Palpatine is truly gone after Episode 9 and her decades of hiding has been trained in the Force. May the Force be with you, nerds.
So basically what you're suggesting is that the way this would work is we don't know or potentially care who Omega's cloned off of, but then the next emperors are cloned off her, who then father Rey's parents or Rey's...
Yes.
Oh.
There's so much going on
but
here.
Clones do age faster, so it's not entirely improbable. But I struggle with the whole idea of cousins and like first.
I feel like do we know that clones age faster?
They
versus
exactly as fast as the plot demands, Tony.
Yeah. No, okay. Well, I was going to say, do they age faster,
or do they age faster?
Possible to age them faster? I guess was my like.
Oh, I thought the implication was, do they passively?
They certainly age them up, right? Because they don't need children to fight their war. But
I think it is a question. Yes. Yeah. That is the question fundamentally. Yes, I agree with you. I don't know if we know the answer to that.
I think the
are they feeding them drugs that age them up, or do they continue?
I think the implication is they do something to them to speed their aging.
And so that now they're whatever they are, they're now on like normal time?
Maybe.
Unclear.
Maybe. Yeah. Probably depends on whether you're on living on an imperial base, taking your daily, you know, inoculations or living on space grease and just, you know, living a grand old life. I mean, I feel like we always kind of like the fan idea that it's like, oh, the clones rapidly age and they all peacefully died of old age and not they have all been murdered by the government.
Right. yeah, I mean, but this was always the case.
Because we're just always looking for reasons to give Emperor Palpatine a pass.
He's a really nice guy if you knew him in person. I just feel like you just want to get him a beer with.
I think, you know, I mean, look, you gotta, you know, some of the stuff he says, you can't take it at face value.
Like, does he really want to wipe out all of them?
Look, does he really want to dissolve the Senate? We don't know. I mean, sure, he says that, but, you know, that's just talk.
That whole thing about ultimate power.
Ultimate power.
Ultimate frisbee power, right?
Yeah. Ultimate power is a thing I shall bring to the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they just cut out the worst time, right? Actually, all of his quotes were just, I blame the media.
I blame the media, too. You know, when he laughs, it's like my grandfather, who was also a murderer and shot blue lightning. It's like how he laughed, too.
To be very clear, we are not pro-Palpatine, nor are we pro-Trump.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad we have to say these things.
I'm glad we've cleared that up.
All right.
But if Palpatine wanted to pay us to take ads...
I would consider it.
Who is Ike Perlmutter, if not the incarnation of Emperor Palpatine?
We will only take... just to be clear, we will only take ads from fictional evil characters, not...
real evil characters?
Yeah, no.
All right.
What
anyway.
Is fiction?
Okay. Grace writes in, hello, professionals. Do you think the assassin that survived the waterfall is someone the audience already knows? As much as I miss Tech, I hope that's not a revivified and brainwashed version of him under that helmet, but I am struggling to think of other name clones that are unaccounted for. This question might be moot by the next time you record, but enjoy your hilarious and insightful coverage either way.
Wow, that's a better question than I've asked on this podcast in several episodes.
I do have another one that links in with it. Do you want to hear this one before
Sure.
This is from Steven. Hey, entitled The Mystery Clone. Hey, Dan and the gang. I listened to your last episode about infiltration extraction and was sure someone would mention something I thought of during the episode, but you didn't. So now I'm emailing you so that you basically have to. The mystery clone who tracked and hunted them during the two episodes never removed his helmet, which also scrambled his voice, as helmets often do in Star Wars, but he was an excellent sniper, and because of the rules of TV, I was waiting for him to remove his helmet and reveal that he was a clone of Crosshair.
Ooh.
Am I crazy? I thought his voice sounded similar. I know it's all just Dee Bradley Baker, but still. And combined with the skills and the facts, we don't know what the experiments they were doing on Tantus, I thought it would be an interesting move. What do you think? Am I crazy? Love listening. So glad you're back. Looking forward to your next episode. P.S. I feel like, as I'm emailing you, I also have to address the moonlighting situation. Is that a rule now? So for what it's worth, I was born late 80s, live in the UK, and had never heard of it until your podcast. So that's another data point for this extremely unscientific study. You're welcome, I guess.
Thank you. High correlation with age. I think they're good questions. I would like to offer two thoughts. One, I hope it's not Tech, because I really like how we wrapped Tech's storyline. I kind of want to put a bow there. I would also just like to recall back to the Ahsoka show. Who is that character who we also didn't see their face on and we spent so much time?
Yeah, the wolf guy. Whatever his name was, and he dissolved.
Yeah, so we were like, oh my god, it's so-and-so. Yeah, there was like what if it's actually Ezra Bridger?
The ninja, guy.
No one.
Yeah, who just the zombie ninja force
this
guy.
This is classic. This is classic Mephisto talk, basically.
I have no idea who Mephisto is.
Mephisto is a villain in the Marvel universe, and literally every time there's a show with an MCU show with a villain that you don't see, everyone's like, "Oh, it's totally Mephisto." And you know what?
It never is. So people, we're due. That's how these things work.
Yeah.
Which show were they particularly convinced it was Mephisto?
WandaVision was a big one.
WandaVision.
Yeah. Oh, it was Agatha all along.
Yeah.
Spoilers for the show that came
also,
out.
Also, Mephisto may be in the Agatha show, but now they're just like pulling the Charlie Brown football thing.
Yeah.
So interesting question. My hunch is it's probably just an unnamed clone that we'll never see.
I agree.
Again, fool me once, I'm on Ahsoka.
I think it's possible there is this is the trick, is that I think it's possible there is a named clone from, you know, the Clone Wars that could be, but again, expecting people to remember, there are so many clones in that show. Yeah. Like, literally, there is only, I'm thinking back, I was like, there is one clone that would surprise me.
Okay, name it.
Fives, but he's really dead. Like, he would have to be extremely dead.
Fives
is the one who finds out about the Order 66 thing.
Oh, that one's so sad. Oh.
And he's been around. He's on.
Oh, that one's hurt.
Because he's CT55555, and he's been around since the beginning, like early Clone Wars episodes. But he dies.
Yeah.
Because he and Echo are buddies.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So, but I think that would be again, Fives' death, like Tech's death, is so narratively satisfying that to bring them back would just undercut it. So I don't think that would be likely.
But we could be wrong.
It could be a time traveler. Anyway.
Let's talk more about the mythology of the father, the son, and the daughter.
Okay. A couple Mastodon posts to address, which are, of course, you can reach us at acp@zeppelin.flights there. Thank you to everybody who writes in. Trevor's back. Trevor says, quote, "I don't know. Perfect. No notes." This is in reference to my catchphrase. But
which I forgot to say at the start of the episode,
which is I don't know. I don't say it at the start of the episode. That's a weird way to start the episode. Hi, I'm Dan Morin. I don't know.
Well, you could deliver it a little bit better, Dan.
I don't know what is a complicating profession, but it certainly is in podcasting or something along those lines.
Trevor adds, but I'd love to hear Dan say moonlighting is a complicated profession.
Seriously, can you say that without muddling the end of it again?
Moonlighting is
do it again.
Profession.
The first time you did it, you really kind of did a sultry moonlighting. Try that again.
Moonlighting is a complicated profession.
Ooh, I like that.
That's pretty good.
That's good. Let's do that.
Trevor says, seriously, that'll love the podcast.
Somebody's ringtone in a week. Do kids still have ringtones? I don't know.
Michael writes, for what it's worth, I loved
my brother.
Yes.
Oh no, probably not.
I loved the TV show Castle, and when people asked me to explain why, I always said it's the first charming detective show with that feel since Moonlighting and Remington Steele. I feel that Michael is trolling us, but it's fine. I'll allow it.
That's a cute show.
Lax Dude writes, a bad guy in a full helmet and a fallen good guy whose body you didn't see. Are they going there? I assume that's in reference to the Darth Vader thing. No, what? I guess it says a bad guy in a full helmet and a fallen good guy whose body we don't see. I guess Tech. So I think this is also saying Tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be devastating.
I'd be disappointed, but
we'll see.
No. Thomas writes, greetings from Norway. From Thomas. Parentheses,
they have podcasts in Norway? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Thomas parentheses, I don't know if it's even how you say yes in Norway. I apologize, Thomas. Thomas writes 49 in parentheses. Finally, a decent moonlighting podcast. Good Star Wars content too. And he adds, when Moonlighting first aired here, the network deemed its title untranslatable, so they called it The Bully and the Blonde. Bolin og Blondinen. I'm sorry for butchering that, but that's what he wrote. Interesting fact. Thank you, Thomas. I did not know that.
Is the character a bully, Dan? Or is
I don't know. I've only seen like three episodes of this show.
Okay. Yeah, Dan, you're our local expert on moonlighting.
I don't know.
Dan, in the land of not knowing anything about moonlighting, you are king.
Oh, yes. Finally.
Yes. We'll make a little crown for you.
Lyle writes, I don't know, Dan, seems like a good catchphrase, maybe with a boing sound effect every time in the morning zoo crew style. Thinking forward, the graveyard scene and Seven Samurai looms large over Star Wars, and I think we'll get at least one more echo of that this season, already set up some with Crosshair and the helmets. That was in the episode at the ice base where he stacks the helmets.
So I've never for seen people, Seven Samurai.
It's an homage.
Well,
yeah.
I have bad news for you about how many samurai there are at the end of the movie. It's not seven.
Fewer than seven.
Yeah. One?
It's like most movies where the person in the name of the movie is dead at the end. Let me see how many movies I can name like this. Seven Samurai. King Kong.
Yep. So
he does not climb down from that tower.
The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one. Romeo and Valance Juliet. That counts.
Well, the movie starts with Liberty Valance's funeral.
Romeo and Juliet, that counts twice.
Marley and Me.
I think that's wrong. First, one of those is a dog.
Do you remember what the first line of that is? You brought it up. Lyle added at the end of that, Ventress is coming back, but what about not dead! ! Mace Windu and Ahsoka's Biff Barriss. Ahsoka's BFF. I read it as Biff because that's not where my brain works.
Because you have another podcast.
Yep.
Yes,
love the show. Thank you, detectives. Nicholas wrote, Acolyte logo features an eclipse. Moonlighting podcast confirmed. and I think, Michael also wrote in the 3 days ago to say it was Bruce Willis's birthday. So happy birthday to Bruce Willis of Moonlighting fame.
Happy birthday, Bruce Willis.
And then Daniel writes, two questions for the panel. First, after this week's trip to Space Florida to ride a space flatboat and wrestle space gators, mm-hmm. what would a trip to space Massachusetts look like? Second, did the bartender have a raised floor?
Have you met Bill Burr's character?
He's in The Mandalorian, the guy who's bald and kind of has a beard.
He's the sharpshooter stormtrooper.
When they break into the base in that one episode, he has to take his helmet off.
Let me help you here. The one character in all of Star Wars who has a Massachusetts accent.
That's right.
Oh, did that work? Did that get you there? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy's like, what are you doing here?
There's that one episode in I think it's in The Mandalorian where they go somewhere and there's Mon Calamari wearing like cable knit sweaters. I feel like that's like,
yeah, but they'd be drinking all iced coffee and they were drinking iced coffee.
You have to walk through like there's like seven of the same donut shop basically.
Yeah.
I will say, yeah, it's the one where they run into, there's the like the fishing town, right? The Mandalorians. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very like Gloucester. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's Gloucester.
First,
yeah, that's North Star. Yeah.
When
but like the rough side.
When the Mandalorian's flying his ship in, he has to hit about four or five potholes along the way.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Matt Damon and Ben Affleck show up very briefly at cameos in the background.
They could be stormtroopers in a cameo in a future Star Wars thing. We can't roll that out.
It's very possible they already know they have been, right? That's like true. Maybe they're really.
Yeah.
Second question was, did that bartender have a raised floor or leg extensions?
Oh, I thought he was hovering.
He's a pit droid. Right?
Yeah.
With a hat, which I do enjoy.
I thought he was like scampering around on top of the bar. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to... these are great questions. I'll have to think about this one. I thought he was floating with like repulsors.
No. Mm. Finally, food science writes in. All of food science, I assume.
Oh.
Hi, guys. I wanted to nominate for Dan's catchphrase, and then he gave me a time code for the last episode, which I looked up, and it's me saying, it's not my fault. And then he sent, I assume, what is a clip of characters from Star Wars saying, it's not my fault.
That's excellent.
Sure, yeah. Harrison Ford and Billy Dee Williams did it better in Empire, but what can you do? I think Bad Batch is doing okay, but I'm not as excited as I was at this point in Rebels. Exfiltration was fine, just feels like they're checking off boxes.
Yeah.
He gives his name then. It's Dave, not Food Science. That's his Twitter handle. Sorry. I had to read it in order. It's not my fault.
That actually may be...
a better catchphrase.
Also, if you start with that, I'm Dan and it's not my fault.
At least it sets the tone. He also added, is Moonlighting Data at the bottom. 53 years old, heard of it, never watched, thought Cheers was a better example of, quote, post-will-they-won't-they ruining a show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think Rebels is a better show because it was like clearly building towards something versus this. I just feel like we're gliding towards something and I just don't know what it is. But yeah, Rebels to me is still the best animated television show overall, with the exception of like season 7 of Clone Wars. That like is a season,
but,
is the
but
best
as
season,
a cohesion,
as a show.
Yeah, as a cohesive show.
There's
fair.
Some real
Clone Wars has those highs, but it has lows like nobody's business.
How low can you go? Jar Jar Binks low is the answer.
Yeah, there was like one or two good ones. Jar Jar. Like, Jar Jar redeems himself in that.
Dan and Kat, there was a trailer for another Star Wars thing this week. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it.
We're not done yet. We're not like after the show. We're not finished. That's not.
Well, okay. I made the mistake of saying that instead of saying, "Do we have time to talk about that Star Wars trailer?"
Too late.
Talking about one episode of Bad Batch for 20 minutes. So
it looks good. It looks like a lot of kung fu or
It's one of those trailers where I can't really tell what's going on because there's just lots of people like punching stuff and spaceships happening and a lot of kung fu, a lot of Jedi kung fu and people shoving each other with the force and stuff.
And maybe
so I like all that
jump. They're same like crucially, it has. I realize it's the actress from Hunger Games. It's Rue.
Playing the main character as well as Carrion Moss. As a Jedi Master.
Who has also aged incredibly well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I've forgotten his name, but I'm going to look it up, is the lead actor from Squid Game.
Oh, and also Jackson Jaguars.
Manny Jacinto.
Manny
his name is not Jacksonville Jaguar.
I think it's his middle name, Dan.
Lee Jung Jae is the lead actor from Squid Game, who plays the sort of, I think, central Jedi Master here.
Yeah. Looks good. Looks like I'm intrigued.
I am, you know, I like the idea of let's do a Star Wars thing that is so far in the timeline that it can't really be connected to anything.
Well, it's only 100 years before and aliens live a long time. Well, I'm saying like Yoda could easily show up if they wanted
to. Okay, fine. Yoda can be in it. You get Yoda. Fine.
What about the other one? The other Yoda.
Yaddle.
Sure. Why do you bring up Yaddle?
I just feel like it's really important that we don't Yaddle erasure. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I would say that one of them
didn't
is in slightly
whole,
more movies.
Didn't she get a whole episode in Tales of the Jedi?
Yeah, she's really great in that episode.
Yeah. I think did she die?
I can't remember. I think she might. So once again, anyways. No, I think it looks interesting. My only... Who's the showrunner? Because my concern is...
Leslie Headland.
The plot basically looks like... Oh,
Russian Doll.
Okay.
Russian Doll.
She'll understand complex and nuance because it feels like the show's like, oh, the Sith is rising. Will anyone believe that the Sith is rising? No one's going to believe us and the Sith will rise. But I'm hopefully looking that we'll get a little more nuanced and interesting than that.
Yeah, I'm intrigued because, I mean, she's sort of been on the... starting to do press junk of details and I read a couple interviews with her and, you know, she's, I think, trying to say like... She's trying to work on like expectation setting and be like, it's not what you think is going on. And like, yes, there is a story. Yes, it does seem to involve the Sith, but like, there's also sort of a murder mystery element to it. And I think what I'm hopeful for looking at this is like, look,
Miss Marple in space.
Yes. Like, it doesn't, it's not Andor in its tone, but that's okay. Yeah. I just want somebody else to do the same execution of their vision that Tony Gilroy did with Andor. Like,
yes, exactly.
That's all we want from any of these shows is like people to be like,
Make decisions.
I've got a great idea for a show.
Yeah.
And I'm going to execute on that show.
Totally.
And like,
I will say that like the High Republic does not excite me at all as a thing. I know there's a bunch of comics that take place in the High Republic. I started reading one of them and I was like, no, I don't care.
They're like some improv comics who pretend they're not High Republic. That is very niche.
It's the dispensary down the street.
Oh, God.
I'm with you now.
That's unfortunate. But if you want to sponsor us, we'll take your money. Anyway,
desperation sells.
People love it when they can just hear how sweaty and hungry for money we are.
Which is the perfect tie-in for High Republic.
sweaty and hungry. That error is not, it's not like, oh gosh, I really want to see a bunch of stories set here. But I am here for, I have an interesting Star Wars story to tell that is not connected to any other Star Wars stuff that you've seen so far. That I'm in it for.
I think it's the only space they can go now that is new and fresh. Because I feel like if they go after episode 9, there's just such a heavy weight and baggage there. Like, I would rather.
I wonder also if, like, maybe they're not super allowed to do, or like, there would be are they allowed to go after episode 9?
So there
I mean,
is,
like, are, is that area saved for future movies?
There is
I
a
guess.
Movie coming. We know this.
Yeah.
It's been announced that there's a new Rey movie. So I think they're probably kind of leaving that untouched until they figure out what that looks like, which honestly, I think probably good.
I don't think they don't want anyone to do any world building in that time, in a TV show.
The Lego movies have done like at least 2 movies in that time.
That's true.
Like, there's the Halloween special and the Christmas special.
I think there's a summer one too that we never watched.
Those are not canon.
Prove it.
I mean, I,
You can't.
I'm not going to choose this battle.
what I do like,
can't the, believe what you want to believe.
I like about this period is the idea that we haven't really explored of the Jedi at their height. Even there, like, honestly, the thing that always interested me about that was the kind of stuff that had been drawn in some of the one of my favorite scenes in the Thrawn trilogy, the Timothy Zahn books.
Ah, there we go. We had to bring it back to Thrawn eventually.
It always has to come back. There's a scene where Luke is like on this planet and he's doing something else, and then like these two guys get into a fight, and one of them's like, no, I want the Jedi to settle this because they're mediators.
That is a big thing.
And he's like, oh man, I am not ready for this.
Yeah.
Wait, and it's like, that is literally your main thing that the Jedi Order is supposed to do, is like arbitrate. Be disputes. A neutral arbiter.
Yeah. And I kind of like, want the series wisdom. Of that Wandering in that Knights. Era where there's like a, you know, this Jedi just sort of out. It's like a little Wild West-ish, right? Where the Jedi's just out. He's by himself.
It's like
or she's by herself.
Judge.
Yeah. And they're like, say, just solving problems. I don't know.
The High Republic comics that I read were Jedi on Coruscant in meetings. And I was like, no, thank you.
That sounds amazing. I will say, I also really enjoyed from what we saw of the trailer. The fight choreography looked really good, and I don't want to speak. I recognize that everyone's artistic work is very important and valued. It's hard, and I'm clearly not the one doing it. So, like, but also criticize. The Ahsoka fight choreography was so boring. Just like this, in comparison, I think was really exciting, and I just think just a lot more. What's the word? There's just a lot more going on.
I think the Ahsoka, the fight choreography kind of showed that. We had a bunch of actors who were not martial artists and probably did not have
that's a fair point.
The resources that a movie has in terms of training non-martial artists to do stunts, right?
I think you're probably right that maybe they're doing the best they could with who they had. Yep.
But also maybe write a story that has less fights in it then, right?
Hedlund is, I think, talked a little bit specifically about like martial arts films being very influential, like wuxia films by like the Shaw brothers, who are a classic sort of, you know, Hong Kong, I believe, kung fu stuff. So there's a lot of stuff in there. There are some characters. I think there's at least one character shown off during the trailer who is a character who appears in the High Republic books. So like, there's definitely some link-ins there to the other stuff, but I don't think you'll need to know anything going in. So I'm very intrigued, and we should mention it debuts on June 4th, I think. So not about a month after we finished
and
our Bad
how many
Batch
episodes?
Coverage. 8, I believe. All the writers and directors have been announced. 8 episodes with a two-parter, the first two showing on June 4th.
Great.
So,
great.
Yeah, we'll be back to cover that after we finish the Bad Batch, and we'll see what happens after that. But we are going to wrap up for this evening. And of course, I would like to thank everybody who wrote into the letters. Really appreciate it. We love reading your letters on the show. We love how engaged you are with our show and whatever show we're watching. So thank you. Also, a special thanks to our members. If you're interested in getting more member content, you can go to theincomparable.com/members, sign up for a membership program. And not only do you get the good, warm, fuzzy feelings of supporting this show, and you can choose to support our show directly, but you get a bunch of other bonus content, access to our member Discord, maybe even some swag, lots of great stuff. So thank you to everybody who supports us, and we encourage you to do so.
Can I ask you a question? Discord, can you do polls?
Not natively, but I think there's a way to do it.
So we could do a poll like whether or not it is Dan's fault?
Nope, that's not possible. And
technology is just not there yet.
It hasn't been invented. and I, of course, would like, most of all, to thank my co-hosts, Tony Sindelar. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, you just want to beat me to it?
Sorry. I was like, that's not what I usually say. I'm wondering why I'm thinking about that right now. Also, everyone stay healthy. Stay healthy.
Yeah, do the cautionary tale here.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We will be back next week, but until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.